Chapter 19. By the time I return home, night is settling over London like a balm, gaslight smoothing the rough edges into a hazy, dark sameness. The house is quiet. Grandmama is off to play cards with her friends. Father's sleeping fitfully in his chair, his book open upon his lap. My father, haunted even in his dreams. The last remnants of the magic flow through me. I close the doors and lay my hand on his brow. Just once, as Felicity said, that's all I need. I'm not using this power for a new ball gown. I'm using it to heal my father. How can that possibly be wrong? But how to begin? Mother told me I must concentrate. I must be sure of what I want and intend. I close my eyes and let my thoughts go to my father, to curing him of his affliction. I wish to heal my father, I say. I wish that he will never again have a desire for laudanum. My hands tingle. Something is happening. Fast as a swollen stream, the magic rages through me and into father. He arches his back with it. My eyes still shut, I see clouds race across the sky, see father laughing and healthy again. He sweeps me into a playful dance and offers Christmas boxes to all the servants, whose eyes light up in gratitude and goodwill. This is the father I knew. I did not realize how much I missed him till now. Tears wet my face. Father stops moaning in the chair. I am ready to move my hand from him, but cannot. There is one last thing, quick as a magician's trick. I see a man's face, his eyes lined in black.
Thank you, Poppet,
he snarls, and then I am free. The candles on the Christmas tree burn brightly. I'm shaking, perspiring from the effort. Father is so peaceful and quiet, I fear I have killed him. Father, I say gently. When he does not rouse, I shake him. Father! He blinks, surprised to see me so agitated.
Hello, darling. Dozed off, did I?
Yes, I say, watching him closely. He touches his fingers to his forehead.
Such strange dreams I had.
What, father? What did you dream?
I can't recall. Well, I'm awake now, and I'm suddenly famished. Have I slept through tea? I shall have to throw myself upon the mercy of our dear cook.
He crosses the room with an energetic stride. In a moment, I hear father's booming voice and the cook laughing. It is such a lovely sound that I find I'm crying. Thank you, I say, to no one in particular. Thank you for helping me to make him well. When I enter the kitchen, father is seated at a small table, taking bites of roast duck and relish on bread, while thrilling our cook and a maid-of-all-work with his adventures.
There I was, face to face with the biggest cobra you could imagine, rising up, tall as a sapling, with a neck fat as a man's arm.
Gracious me, the cook says, hanging on every word. Whatever did you do, sir?
I said, here now, my good fellow, you don't want to eat me. I'm nothing but gristle. Take my associate, Mr. Robbins.
Oh, you didn't, sir.
I did.
Father is enjoying his audience. He jumps up to act out the rest like a pantomime.
He went for Robin straight away. I'd only an instant to act. Quiet as a church mouse, I pulled out my machete and sliced through the cobra just before he would have struck old Robbins and killed him.
The maid, a girl of about my age, gasps. Beneath the bit of soot on her nose, she's quite lovely.
He was most delicious.
Father sits with a satisfied smile. I am so happy to see him this way. I could listen to his stories all night.
Oh, sir, that was thrilling. The adventures you've had.
The cook hands a plate to the maid.
Here, take this to Mr. Kartik for me.
Mr. Kartik, I say, feeling as if I should faint.
Yes,
father says, sopping up his relish.
Kartik, our new coachman.
I'll go, if you don't mind, I say, taking the plate from the rather disappointed-looking maid. I should like to meet our Mr. Kartik. Before anyone can object, I make my way to the mews, passing a charwoman covered in soot and a weary laundress, her hands pressed to her back. There are entire families living in the rooms above these stables. It is hard to imagine. The smell has me pressing my hand to my nose.